Oh, I think we've got Dougie.
I remember watching the comedian, I think it was Tim Mitchin, and he said religious people think, you talk to them about Darwinism and they say, oh, it's just a theory. And what he said was, gravity is just a theory, so why don't you all float away? And he said it with a swear word. So, I mean theories. I mean, things are just theories until they can be disproved. But, I mean, every time an apple falls from the tree, it sort of, it actually makes the case for gravity as a theory that works. I mean the same with Darwinism. I mean, there are problems with Darwinism, how flowered plants came about and things. Darwin struggled with that. He called it the abominable problem or whatever. But he didn't know everything, and these theories been proved correct. So theories can be correct, but they can be disproved if something else comes along or whatever. Like if an apple starts to go upwards instead of falling off the tree, like you said. But I mean, I think Marxism isn't really a science. It's a social theory, you know, based on how profits are made and how production is made. And it's true that workers are better off now in some countries, but still poverty exists, food banks exist, and children go hungry and things in this country. So not things have changed since Marx's time. But I mean, theories are interesting.
I think the sort of general accepted definition is a theory is something which is a falsifiable argument, and otherwise it's a hypothesis. I don't know. I think that might be Richard might be able to correct me on that. Richard?
You said some really interesting things there. A Popperian theory of science has actually been thrown over since the fall of logical positivism, and it's actually been demonstrated that even falsifiability is not sufficient. They use another term now. It's just that a scientific theory can fail. But Popper is a sort of hate object as far as I'm concerned. So I'd like to come back on that. Popper's attack on Marx was based on an extremely narrow concept of scientific. What a scientific theory was. And scientific theory doesn't, I mean, one objection that's often made is that, you know, it's often said that it has to be mathematically precise. Well, this is actually not true. It doesn't, a scientific theory does not have to be mathematically precise. A theory often contains laws which are, a scientific theory contains a number of propositions bundled together, some of which are laws, which are mathematical predictions, which are obviously by definition mathematically precise, but it can also contain principles which are not subject to mathematical rigor. So, for example, if you insisted that a scientific theory had to be mathematically precise, you could throw out the entire discipline of evolutionary biology, because it's not, because it's dependent upon random variables. You cannot predict how it is actually going to function in the future, what species it's going to produce, and the same with other sciences as well, which are not sort of hard sciences like physics and chemistry. I think in terms of understanding Marx as a scientific theory, it absolutely falls within the definition of a scientific theory within itself. But it's not dealing with mathematic precision. His concept of value that he takes and from which he builds his whole theory is basically a heuristic. It's an approximation. It's a simplification. So Marx is not saying this is absolutely how capitalism works. As a scientific theory often does, he takes a simplified model of reality in order to approach it. If you don't simplify it, it's just too complex to approach. So he takes a simplified model and he uses a whole series of approximations throughout to those who've read Capital. He's constantly saying, okay, we're going to simplify here, we're going to simplify there, we're going to simplify this, and actually looking at a very simplified concept. So, yeah, you know, Marxist is often attacked for you know, he's often said that his concepts are religious, for example, like, you know, what is this value? You know, you can't touch it, you can't taste it, you can't smell it. But that's true of all scientific theories. You know, you don't actually have to prove your initial assumption in the scientific theory. You don't. I mean, you know, the concept of, like, conservation of energy. Well, what the fuck is energy? You know, you can't touch it, you can't taste it, you can't do anything with it. It's as abstract as Marx's concept of value. You don't actually have to prove your initial assumption. You only have to prove, as Paddy said, the consequences that you can deduce from it, which is what, you know, sort of has happened with Marx. And so the fact Marxian theory is a whole bundle of propositions. So it doesn't matter if one or two of them fail. You know, if you can make predictions from them and they don't turn out, well, you can abandon one or two of the propositions without abandoning the entire theory. And that happens in science all the time. So the fact that Marx appears to have, you know, he's not a prophet. So appears some of his supplementary assumptions don't seem to have worked out, doesn't mean that the theory itself is wrong. So I sound as if I'm being a bit sort of messianic about this, and I am a bit about Capital, but just because, you know, you can, I'm not, again, as I said, Marxism is not a science, but Capital actually presents a scientific theory which allows Marx to explore social relationships in a way that is not possible in any other way. You know, so he can actually do things that, for example, many economists can't, who take a mathematically formalist view, and they end up in a complete fantasy world because they didn't actually start with the real world, which is what Marx does. Okay, sorry, I'll shut up now.
Thank you, Richard. Freddie.
Yeah, evening all. Unfortunately, I missed probably the first 20 minutes, half hour of tonight's discussion. But I think I've picked up the thread adequately, and that the use of terminology and language and analysis and what is scientific and what is not scientific. And whilst it's of tremendous interest, long time since I've read to any real extent the works of Marx, etc. I don't walk about carrying Das Kapital with me or the Communist Manifesto with me. I mean, for me, Marx was writing about society at that time, did try to draw some conclusions as to what was happening and what could happen in the future. All of it very, very credible. My point from this is, and from the discussion in general when we're having amongst ourselves, is that when I'm sitting in the pub, unfortunately not right now because I can't do it like the rest of you, but when I'm sitting in the pub talking to people about socialism and the need for socialism, I can't often think about saying, well, listen, Karl Marx said this, or Karl Marx said that, or Frederick Engels said this, or whatever it might be. I think you're getting the drift of where I'm going with this, is that, you know, we're looking at society as it is today, and with I think, quite a substantial degree of prediction where it's going to be tomorrow. You know, I think that perhaps the party, on a whole, would be better concentrating on how we're going to seek to achieve socialism, rather than, because most of the workers that whenever I'm speaking to people, they ain't that, well, I don't get the impression that they're interested in what Karl Marx wrote or in that field. What they want to understand is, why do you think socialism will work? Why do you think it will be better than capitalism? I think at times we're extending ourselves here to not saying, how can we go out and seek to convince workers more? Because I can't recall speakers in the party, for example, who going back many years. And some of you know who I'm talking about, people like Vic Vanney, Steve Coleman, Dick Donnelly, your good self, Paddy, and such like when I hear you talking and speaking. I don't hear all this about, you know, Karl Marx said this and Karl Marx said that. What we're doing is we're analysing society as it is today and how we progress that. Don't you think we should be better concentrating on that? Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Freddie. Well, just before I go to Steve, just something that occurred to me from what Freddie said about, you know, Karl Marx said this and that and the other. I think most of us would probably agree. You're absolutely right, Freddie. We're not in the business of making arguments from authority. You know, something is right just because bloody a beardy German said it a century and a half ago. I think that's said right. I think it's much more in the application of the knowledge, isn't it? How to use it. I've often thought of Marx's arguments in terms of you know, weaponized arguments. And I'll give you an example. Somebody comes up to you and says, no, capitalism's right. The rich create wealth and they deserve to make a profit. What's wrong with that? And this is where you need to weaponize Marx, because in order to take that assumption apart, which is a very, very common assumption, a lot of people believe it, the rich create wealth and they deserve to make a profit, you have to know the arguments. Now, I'm not saying that I'd be able to do it. That's why I'm studying Marx. I'm reading Capital now for the second time, just in order to take apart these kind of common assumptions that you hear all the time, and you hear it on the media all the time. So, you know, and the arguments are, I think, well, they proceed from a scientific sort of, you know, perspective. They're rational, they're logical, they make sense. But they take time to master. And that's what our job is. Our job is to hear people. When people come up to us in the street and they say things like that, we need to be able to say, well, if that was true, if that's proposition A, then proposition B also ought to be true. Is it true? No, it isn't. And undermine their assumption on the spot. It's quite difficult to do. It takes a lot of study. It takes a lot of time to work out how to do that well. And because we don't have a lot of public meetings anymore, you know, we're losing. I worry that as a party, we're losing the ability to do this, to apply this sort of knowledge in practical situations where we can make a difference to people's opinions. Anyway, that's enough of a speech from me. So over to Steve.
Yeah, just taking it from a slightly different. What you've got to do is look at this. Absolutely, look at where people are and where people are, and just take the example of the Trade Union Congress. One of the aims of the Trade Union Congress is to achieve fair wages, right? Now, this is the argument that Marx was in 1875 with the International Working Men's Association. And this is what people think. There is a fair wage for a fair day's work, and it's absolute bollocks. And if you don't know how to argue against that, which is the same as what Paddy's saying about the contribution that the rich make, where are you left? And not only that, where do you get your arguments? When the Labour Party or the Conservative Party come at an election and say, we're going to make sure the economy is okay. Well, I'm very sorry, but they cannot make sure the economy is okay. And they cannot make sure the economy is okay because of the basic mechanism of capitalism. And this is the argument again. This and why we want socialism. We don't want socialism. I think this is one of the hard things to get across. We don't want socialism because we think it's a really great philosophical idea. We want socialism for our economic benefit. We want to make life better for us, but we've got to be able to explain to people why life is, our lives as workers are screwed, and it's because of the mechanisms of the system. them. And not only is this screwing up our lives, it might screw up the entire future of the human race because of the way things are going. And these are the mechanism. It's the mechanism of the profit motive. I'm sorry, Mike Foster, but it is the profit motive. It's the value that drives the economy, and that is what screws us up as workers, and it's what is going to screw up the planet if we allow it to continue. But that's it. Thanks.
Okay, thanks. Freddie, again?
I've created the impression that I didn't think Marx and his analysis is relevant. Then forgive me, that was never the intention. The intention of what I'm trying to contribute here is our message and the way in which it's getting put across. Again, I repeat, when I'm sitting in the pub talking to people, I don't start quoting what Karl Marx said. If somebody asks me about the profit motive system, etc., I try and explain it as best I can, say in terms of the loaf of bread that's baked. You can see that it's not baked for people to eat because you've not got the money for it. You don't get it. I don't believe they need to start quoting Marx on this or any other sort of philosopher on it. The party's been clear in its position over the years, and understands the Marxian case, and people like Adam, etc., put it across exceptionally well. But sometimes the language in it, to me, the sort of average, if there is such a thing as your average everyday worker, wouldn't read Marx. What they want to hear is what life story that is, and how the socialist case is about. So I haven't suggested that Marx isn't relevant. I'm just trying to suggest that we look at the language in which we use ourselves at times. One of the best articles that I've read recently in the Standard, and I'm always happy with the quality of the contributors to the Standard, but Nick Sampa's article on this month's Standard was one of the best I've read for a long time. It was in language the everyday worker, in my opinion, understands. And that's the point I'm trying to get at here.
Okay, thank you. I'm guessing the next comment is just a comment. So I'll go to Howard. I think I can't work out whether you were commenting or asking to comment.
You're not going to believe this. That was the cat walking across my keyboard.
Yeah, I wondered if it was that. Something like that, yeah.
No, it's all right.
Okay, all right. Well, Mike Foster.
Cheers. Following on from what Steve said, I didn't mean that the profit motive isn't important in what drives society still. My point was that we need to explain and clarify how it's important when there are other factors to take into account which weren't around in Marx's time, such as the welfare state, internet, mass media. So my point was that we shouldn't just rely on Marx without reanalyzing how his theories are still relevant. And of course I do believe they are still relevant, but my point was I didn't mean to imply that the profit motive wasn't important. Of course it is. It's just sometimes that's a bit disguised by what else is going on in society. Thank you.
Okay, Steve.
I'm feeling a bit like Headmaster. I wasn't trying to be punitive towards either Freddie or just to point out to you, I think Paddy and I have had this discussion because we're both in the same Marx study group. That it is appallingly difficult to read Marx. He must have been an absolute to think that the working class, the majority of the working class, would be able to grasp what he's saying in the way that he's done it. Even in his so-called popularized stuff, which is value, price, and profit, that's really difficult to get your head around as well. So what Paddy and I are after doing is a Peter and Jane primer for Marx. But the problem then is that you then start to bring in distortions. So it really is it really is worth reading. But absolutely agree with what Fred is saying. I might, by the way, absolutely agree with what you're saying, that when it's the way that we put across the ideas. By the way, I've recently just took come again after years and years, Comrade Hardy's talks, which are available on Marx in Economics. If you've not listened to them, I'd encourage you. They're absolutely wonderful. They are absolutely wonderful. It's on the Socialist Studies website, and I'll put it up. But I would encourage all people here tonight just to listen to what Comrade Hardy said. It is absolutely wonderful. Okay, that's it.
Oh, I suppose I might as well point out at this point that on our website we've got a load of audio. It's all, we just kind of re-indexed it so you can find everything now. And there's tons of stuff on Marx in Economics on there. Some really good stuff. Some Hardy stuff as well. So check it out, Joel.
Yeah, on the subject of language, I know since I've been listening on Discord, there's been some occasions where some people have been using terms like the bourgeoisie and middle class. And, it's like, you know, I don't think we should be using stuff like bourgeoisie because it's just, it's an old term and I mean, who uses it now? But that's just a point just about language and how we get the socialist case across to people. And I mean, Fred is right. I mean, it's if we can get the case across in a way which is easy to understand, I mean, that's an art in itself. Thank you.
I think somebody keeps, a friend of mine keeps giving me journals by various left communist outfits, and if you think that we're using out of date terminology, you should read some of this stuff. I mean, some of the funniest stuff I think I've ever read was from that bunch of lunatics in, I think, are they in Peru, Shining Path? Absolutely bonkers. I don't know what century they think they're in, but it's just insane. So by comparison, we're really good.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying we're using it all the time, but there hasn't been occasions where it has slipped in. And I mean, bourgeoisie, I mean, anyone would think we're in the French Revolution. But it's funny as well, I mean, but as I say, I mean, the case of socialism is really, it's simple, isn't it? But it's how we get it across to people.
Howard, is that your cat walking across your keyboard again? I'm guessing it was. So, Mike Brown.
No, it's not. Sorry.
Oh, sorry. Go on, then.
Sorry, no, it's not. No, sorry. I had to hide the keyboard. But I do want to say a word. Sorry. Just a quick word. I noticed that the website reference Steve has given is to Socialist Studies. Presumably that is the Socialist Studies who hate our guts. Good. I mean, if they've got stuff we can use, that's great. I mean, I still get their journal, Socialist Studies Group, who split from the party in, I think it's 1991 or something. Yeah, 1991, 92. Frankly, their journal is, there's absolutely nothing in it that I don't agree with. I mean, I think party members should read it. You know, it's there's some really interesting and informative stuff in it. And if they've got tapes, old tapes of Hardy's available, we should definitely use them. Yeah.
Okay, Mike Brown.
Something that Steve Finch mentioned. He's studying Marx with yourself. But there was a guy in 1919 condensed Marx into one book in order. Look at all the waffle, as it were, all the extra bits, and really condensed it into a logical order. And you might want to get a copy of that and study it when you're trying to study the four volumes, I would imagine, of Capital. Howard, those people in social studies were expelled by those of the party for not using the condensed name in 1991. They shouldn't have been ever expelled. They should have been slapped under two hands of the wrist and the wrist, but never expelled. There were two very good ideas they had. But anyway, that's all I want to say. You might want to find it. I think it's called The People's Marx. It's one volume and it condenses it in logical order.
Okay, thanks, Mike. We'll look into that. I don't know if maybe Steve knows about that already, but we can certainly look into it. Richard.
Yeah, only to say that I'm a great fan of Hardy's as well. And when I first joined the party back in the 1970s, Hardy was very active then, and spent many, many happy hours sort of sitting, listening to him, conversations over a cup of coffee in head office. And I think one of the really interesting things about Hardy, his approach to Marx, was that he was very much an empiricist. So he was very much into looking for evidence, which would actually confirm Marx's predictions and his thesis. So, I mean, some of the comments that Mike Foster has been saying, you know, he's very much, you know, we're talking about the 1970s, 1980s, 1990s. But during that period, he was very much up to date in the in his approach. And if apart from the talks that he gave, many of his major articles are actually now on the Marx and Engels Internet Archive. They're actually archived there if anybody wants to look at them. But I'd also like to say that for clarity of for a really clear way of putting forward a socialist case by somebody that we wouldn't actually regard as a socialist, but nevertheless is very steeped in Marx and has a very, very clear way of actually presenting arguments, is Richard Wolff. You have to be a bit careful with him because he's, he's not exactly on that. His interpretation of Marx is not exactly the same as that. But if you want to find ways of answering the kind of questions that regularly come up, he's got hundreds of videos on the internet. So he's very much worth looking up. Okay, cheers.
I wonder if you could just type his name out, Richard, so we can see it and just type it into the queue.
Will do. Yeah.
Okay, Steve.
I think I've got Wolf's name. We're Richard. Yeah, I mean, we seem to have slightly wandered away from the point, but as we're so far off the point, can I just say to people here now, if Richard and I are on the education committee, and it'd be really this system is really useful for having discussion groups. We're already running a couple of Marx study groups. If for example, Joel, you're saying, well, how do we nail the case down? I think the only thing that we can do now, as part of the preparation for when we can actually, is we could use this time to have little groups on this system where we sharpen our arguments using. The classical texts, using the text that we've got in the in our own resources, just to work together to get to go out again and talk to workers about this sort of stuff. So I'd ask you, if you're interested in that, we can set up a group, no problem whatsoever. Just give us a shout to either me or Hood. That shut everybody up.
Mike?
If Richard could tell us what books by Richard Wolff he's quoting, he's putting down, because he wrote quite a few books, but which ones in particular, Richard?
Okay, I imagine Richard will find some titles for you. Paul Edwards.
Yeah, thanks, Paddy, and fair play to Steve, you know, for encouraging people to participate in that little sort of idea of educating themselves if you know there are questions about their competence on or their knowledge about Marx and how to get the message across. I think as a Marxist organisation, we should be duty bound to be familiar with Marx's arguments. And you know, that's the sort of thing that we're built on as a socialist. So if you want to call yourself a socialist, you really ought to have a good fundamental grasp of Marxist arguments. Now, you know, you don't have to be able to recite it word for word, but certainly, you know, I think it's an absolute given and an imperative that, you know, in order to argue from a Marxist perspective, you really have a reasonably good grasp of the Marxist case and these classes that Steve has got going. I'm pretty sure would help people on their way to build their confidence in arguing that case. I don't think we should undermine or distance ourselves from Marx in any way, but you know, if anything, we need to strengthen the case that he built around, spent a lifetime on, or near as damn it. You know, it's every bit as relevant today as it's always been. I certainly don't think for one moment that we can deny that it's anything other than scientific either. You know, in the case of, you know, the polar opposite sort of argument of capitalism, you can see it, you can feel it, you can breathe it. And as an antithesis, socialism stands to reason that it's every bit as scientific as capitalism is. In the reality, that the opposite is true. And I don't see that there's anything controversial or particularly weak in that argument. You know, for every positive there is a negative and vice versa. You know, they're poles apart, it's the exact opposite. So it stands to reason that if you can eat, sleep, feel and breathe capitalism, and the opposite is such that is equally accurate and true and every bit of scientific, I think that's an absolute given.
Okay, thanks, Paul. Janet.
Thank you all for all the really, really stimulating discussion that's been going on, and suggestions as well. I was going to make one, but probably I'd be laughed out of court, because I was quite influenced by Paul Lavargue's The Student's Marx when I first came into contact with the party. Now, it may be awful to many people, but at that time I found it quite helpful. The other thing that really made me influence me was to hear about Marx and how when he I think he was studying law when he was young, and he read about the business of the law being changed so that the peasants could no longer go into the woods to get their firewood, and that set him off on his avenue of studies, which culminated in Capital, which I thought which really influenced me greatly at that time. And the other thing is a little bit of a gossipy thing about Hardy, because he said to me once, "Why aren't you knitting at party meetings anymore, as many of us women used to do in those years, because we weren't attuned to sitting around doing nothing, I suppose." Anyway, I said that because mainly you could buy ready-made woolly things being imported from other countries cheaper than you could knit you themselves. And I could see behind his eyes there was something being typed out, an article on production. So that was quite interesting. What's the other thing? Can't think of the other thing. I'll stop there. Thank you all for your contributions.
Thanks, Tony. When you said the students' marks, did you say Paul Lafargue did that? I was just trying to find it.
Yes, it was Lafargue. It was the son-in-law of Marx.
Yeah, Lafargue, right. Yeah, I was just trying to find it. If only someone could find a link to that, that would be handy as well. Nobody's put anything in the queue. Something occurred to me, well, ages ago, I didn't say it, but when I was talking about my lack of scientific outlook as a youth. And something else occurred to me that's a bit sort of tangential to this that I thought I might just throw in anyway. And it was when I was at school. I don't know if anybody else had this experience, but when I was at school, there was a sort of unspoken but fairly universal assumption that you either had a scientific type brain or you had an artistic brain. I think it was, I think this was kind of like a sort of Chinese whisper version of the left brain and right brain theory, where the right brain is the sort of holistic and creative and arty half, and the left brain is the sort of analytical, verbal reasoning half. And the theory ran that, you know, just as you're kind of predominantly left-handed or right-handed, so you were predominantly left-brained or right-brained. And the impression I had at school was that it was far more cool to be right-brained, holistic, creative, arty, than it was to be left-brained, analytical. Almost like, you know, the arty people were the sort of mammalians, the warm-blooded mammalians, and the, you know, the analytical people were the sort of cold-blooded reptilians. And it struck me that this was a class, this was actually a class-based view. It had come out of class differences, because what happened in olden times was that it's only rich kids that were able to go to university, and because they were all paid by their parents, and they all took the kind of soft humanities subjects, or what were perceived as soft humanities subjects, because they weren't really concentrating on getting a job at the end of it. So the sciencey subjects, the technical subjects, tended to be sort of sought after by the poor working class kids. And so there grew up this kind of, unspoken but snobbery about science subjects versus art subjects, that was reflected in a sort of similar snobbery between the universities and the polytechnics. And I think quite a lot's been written about this, and the damage to the capitalist economy in the UK anyway, because so few students were going into technical subjects and science subjects. And I think Harold Wilson back in the 1960s, when he started the polytechnics, talking about the white heat of technology and all this sort of rhetoric, was to correct an economic problem that was caused by this kind of social snobbery, this division into arty and sciencey brains. But it had a powerful impression on me, and all the people in my generation thought that we were either arty people who couldn't do science and wouldn't even try to think in that way, because we were incapable of it. You know, we were all right-brained people and we couldn't think like that. And then all the people who were left-brained, you know, these analytical types, couldn't possibly understand, you know, the beauty of a summer's day or lyrical poetry or, you know, any of these sort of things. That was a really powerful kind of impression that I think swept through a generation, or several generations probably. And, you know, this is all the backdrop, the class backdrop to the sort of discussion we've been having tonight about, you know, how scientific is socialism and what do we mean by scientific. Anyway, those were just some thoughts that I had. Richard, I think. Richard.
Hi, yeah. Just to say that I put Wolf, links to Wolf's, a lot of Wolf's videos up on the useful links thing. But for anybody who's interested, and I remember there is actually a condensed version of Capital written around about 2006, 2007, 8, sometime around there, by David McClellan, who is a sort of kind of a fairly big name in sort of popularizing Marx. So it's condensed into one, the three volumes condensed into one volume. And as I remember, it was published by Oxford University Press, if anyone is interested in that. But there's also, for somebody who finds the whole thing a bit too much, there's also Marx for Beginners. And I don't know how you pronounce the name. It's a Spanish name, Steve. You might have, may be able to help me. Ruiz, R-U-I-S. It's one of those graphic books. And I've read a number of sort of some companions to Marx. And the problem with a lot of them, well, with all of them, in fact, to one degree or another, is that they all spin Marx to a particular political point of view. So that their usefulness is limited. But actually, this Marx for Beginners, apart from about three pages at the end where he introduces Lenin, the whole thing, it's a pretty good account of Marx. So if anybody is into those kind of graphic novels, graphic texts, and wants and is interested, then that would be the one to go for, I think. Marx for Beginners by Ruiz, R-U-I-S, Ruiz, Rice, Ruiz. Okay.
Okay, well, and nobody else is proposing to speak, so I'm guessing that we're approaching wrapping this up. One last chance for anybody to say anything.
Pat, you can just say thanks very much for this. It's a good job you didn't use the word Marx in the title of it. So you got people to come in as a science and learn all about Marx. So it's quite a clever use of that. Anyway, thanks a lot for all this. And I'm not going to say anything about your left brain, right brain rubbish. Yeah. Remember that from the 70s. Jesus Christ.
Oh, you do. I'm glad. I thought it was, I was hoping, I didn't think it was just me. Right. Okay. Okay, well...
Just another point. Sorry, just to remind comrades as well that the YouTube's quite a good resource as well for learning about Marx. There's lots of good stuff on there, most of it fairly accurate, so that's worth bearing in mind too, comrades. And thanks, Paddy. It was a very good event again tonight. Cheers.
Sorry, can I just add on to that? Yeah, the YouTube is great, but do beware, there's a hell of a lot of Stalinists on there, on YouTube at the moment. I mean, it's dominated. YouTube is, left-wing politics is dominated by Stalinists on YouTube at the moment. And some of them have rather deceptive websites that look as if they're just like introducing you to Marx. And in fact, they're introducing you to Stalin. I don't suppose any of us would be fooled by that, but, you know, just be aware of it. And, thank you.
It's a fair point. There is, and it's a case of just, you know, being kind of selective, but there is lots of good stuff out there. Cheers.
Yeah, absolutely. No, absolutely.
Okay, well, I think with that, it's probably a good moment to call it a night. Thanks for coming. Thanks. Right, thanks for coming, everybody. And
thanks, Paddy.
We'll see you again on Friday for the talk on Friday.
Thank you, Paddy.
All right, see you later. Bye.
See you, everyone.